If we're fortunate, we have some record of what they said and did, and some description of them. But the inner life of a pure devotee is inaccessible to conditioned souls. We don't have the means to understand. What is it? Vaishnavar Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Nabujai. Even the most learned person cannot dare to presume that he can understand the Kriya and the Mudra, the actions and even the gestures of a Vaishnava. His inner life is a secret to us. And Uddhava is one of the most confidential servants of Krishna during his pastimes on this earth. So it's a very bold thing to try to pretend we can understand anything about him. And I'm not going to try to sit here and pretend I'm some rasika who knows some secrets about Uddhava. But we have access. We have some way of knowing through Srimad Bhagavatam and a few other very elevated Vaishnava Shastras. The followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Sanatana Goswami, they wrote very valuable books based on their study and understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam and their personal insights. And there are a few other literatures. So we're going to study Uddhava, especially based on what is told about us, told about him in various cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Third canto, 10th canto, 11th canto, 12th canto, we're introduced to Uddhava in various places. And then there are two other sources I'm going to draw on. One is Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Uddhava appears prominently in both the separate halves of this book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And the third source that I'm drawing on is the Bhagavat Mahatmya, glorification of the Bhagavatam, found in the Skanda Purana, the Vaishnava Kanda, one section of the Skanda Purana that is only four chapters long, and that comprises the Bhagavat Mahatmya, the glorification of the Bhagavatam. And Uddhava appears prominently there also. So I've given you a translation of that, those four chapters, my own translation. So that booklet you have, that's your homework material. We're not going to read these verses and purports in class. We don't have time for that. So your responsibility is, in preparation for the following day, to read the assigned passages that I ask you to read. And then we'll have some discussion of them the next day, and we'll also read from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And the last day or two, we'll read from the Bhagavat Mahatmya. So tomorrow's homework assignment, at the beginning of this booklet, read everything that's from the first two chapters of the third canto. There's the two verses in the very beginning we're going to discuss today, from the fourth chapter. Don't worry about those, but all the verses here and purports from Prabhupada from chapter 1 and chapter 2 of the third canto. That's through, I think, page 12. So that you should read for tomorrow's class. Yes? Yeah. I think it's 12. Let's see. Yeah. After that, it shifts to chapter 4. That'll be for the next day. Okay? Yeah, the middle of page 12, up to that point. So read it. Read that much tonight. You can read more, but at least read that much. Okay, we're going to start with two verses, just to get a little peek into his personality. Two statements made by Krishna himself. Actually, this is within the conversation between Vidura and Uddhava. Hi, bro. When Krishna was about to leave this world, he arranged for the Yadu dynasty to destroy itself. There was a incident in which Samba and other young boys of the Yadus were playing a trick on some sages, and they got cursed. They asked the sages, this lady, it was actually Samba dressed up as a lady, and they visited the sages and asked them, this lady, what kind of child will she give birth to, a boy or a girl? And the sages were annoyed and said, this lady will give birth, she wasn't a lady anyway, she was Samba. She's going to give birth to a lump of iron that will destroy the Vrishni dynasty. And that came to pass. The story is there in the 11th canto. And Krishna thus arranged for the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. And then he intended himself to leave this world and send all his own devotees back to where they came from. Some of Krishna's devotees in Dwarka were Krishna's eternal associates in Dwarka in the spiritual world, Goloka Dwarka. So those original associates, eternal associates, were sent back to Goloka. Other devotees who joined Krishna in Dwarka were Vaikuntha Vasis. They were sent back to Vaikuntha. Others were demigods. They were sent back to the heavenly planets. And many personalities were mixed. They were combined. Not that you can take two jivas and cut them up and mix them up, but in the same body, in the same person, may be an eternal associate, but the demigod who is his expansion in the heavenly planets may join him, just like Krishna is joined by all his expansions. Narayan enters within Krishna when Krishna appears. When Krishna appears in Vrindavan, he's killing demons. But it's not Krishna, two-handed Gopal Krishna's business to kill anybody. That's the business of Vishnu. So it's actually Lord Vishnu within Krishna who kills the demons in Vraja. Because when Krishna appears, his expansions, his Narayan Vishnu expansions, merge into him and appear along with him. So in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram are there, but you don't see four-handed Vishnu. The four-handed Vishnu is within Krishna's body and kills all the demons that have to be killed. Then when Krishna goes to Mathura and Dwarka, then he shows his forearms. Then Vasudeva, Sankarsana, and then later Pradyumna is born as the son of Krishna. Anirudha is born as the grandson of Krishna. This is the Chaturvyuha. Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Anirudha. This is the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha. They appear from separately. So also, however mysterious process it works by, Krishna's eternal associates are joined, they have their expansions. This is, we'll read later on, next week sometime, how, just as Krishna has his expansions, his eternal associates also have their expansions. The original is living in Goloka, he has a Vaikuntha expansion, and even a demigod expansion within the material world. Just like we know that Nanda Maharaj is sometimes called Vasudrona, that the demigod called Drona, one of the eight Vasus, took birth as Nanda Maharaj. But actually the original Nanda Maharaj is an eternal associate of Krishna in Goloka. This demigod Vasu is described as an expansion of the original Nanda Maharaj. The two of them both appear as Krishna's father. They join together, however that works, and appear as Krishna's father on this earth. That we'll read about later. But Krishna is arranging to send all his devotees back to the spiritual world. And Uddhava was concerned. He knew. Uddhava was smart. He knew that Krishna was about to wrap up his pastimes. And therefore, when Krishna sent, he was actually warned. Uddhava was warned, don't go with the other Yadu princess to Prabhas. It's going to be a disaster. Don't go. So Uddhava stayed behind in Dwarka. And then when Krishna left and went to Prabhas, Uddhava followed right behind him. He couldn't tolerate. He knew Krishna was about to leave the world, and he couldn't tolerate the upcoming separation. So he simply followed right behind Krishna all the way to Prabhas. Prabhas is about 120 kilometers from Dwarka, on the coast of Gujarat. So,
can I ask a question?
Yeah, please, yeah.
You were talking about Krishna being two-armed in Vrindavan, but and forearms in Mathura.
Sometimes, sometimes.
What about Kurukshetra? Because we hear in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking Krishna to show his forearm.
Yes. Yeah, well, that is, I mean, that's Krishna coming from Dwarka. And so it's Dwarka Krishna, Vasudev, who's present on the Battle of Kurukshetra battlefield with Arjuna. And he sometimes in Dwarka shows four arms. Depends on who he's dealing with. If, you know, if he's dealing with a devotee who has a reverential mood in Dwarka, he'll show four arms sometimes. He usually showed two arms to Arjuna, but in this occasion, after showing 1,000 arms, then he showed four, and then he showed his two again. Sort of a transition. After showing his fearful universal form to Arjuna, then he converted into four arms. And then Arjuna said, okay, now can I see you the way I'm used to seeing you in two arms?
So we can understand that usually Arjuna would see Krishna in that two arm form.
Because a four arm form is the official form of God. So if you have a reverential mood and you don't feel too close, too intimately connected, then you see God with four arms. You know, in his official, you know, role as God. Yeah. Yes, which is? Oh, yes. Yes, that also. I mean, everything Krishna does can serve a number of purposes. Yeah. I didn't mean to get into a detailed discussion of, who's who. I just wanted to sort of show the scene, describe the scene, what's going on here, in what's leading up to these two verses. Uddhava followed Krishna to Prabhas. He's in great anxiety because Krishna's about to leave. And not only that, but he senses that Krishna is going to ask him to stay. Everybody else is getting sent back to where they came from. And Krishna is going to ask Uddhava to remain in this world. You know, just like Hanuman was asked to stay behind by Lord Ramachandra. Wasn't allowed to go. Everybody in Ayodhya went back with Lord Ramachandra, but Hanuman was ordered, you stay here. He's still here in this world. Similarly, Uddhava was ordered to stay back. So, that's a little complicated. We'll have to just figure that out as we read through these things. I don't know if he's still in Bhadarik Ashram. I don't know how long he stayed there, whether he's still there. That I can't say. He is here in another form. But I won't give that away yet. Maybe you know, but we'll get to that. So Krishna, Uddhava met with Vidura. And they discussed Krishna's. Just before Krishna was about to disappear, he was sitting by himself at Prabhas under a banyan tree. Uddhava came to him, and expressed his distress. And Krishna explained to Uddhava that I'm asking you to stay here. And in these two verses, Krishna is explaining why. This is from the fourth chapter of the third canto of the Bhagavatam, two verses, spoken by Krishna himself. So you have it on do you have a booklet? Can you give them? Anybody who doesn't have one, just take it. Okay. And then we're going to look at a commentary on these two verses, on one of the two verses, the second one, by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So I'll read the Sanskrit and Prabhupada's translation. Krishna speaking. Nodavon vapimanyuno yadgunayar narditak prabhu ato madvayunam lokang grahayan ihatishtatu. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way, because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he may remain in this world in order to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. And then he goes on, Krishna says, this is actually the second verse spoken by Shukadev. Evam triloka guruna sandishta shabda yonina badirashramam asadya harim ije samadhina. Shukadev Goswami informed the king that Uddhava, being thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of all Vedic knowledge and the spiritual master of the three worlds, reached the pilgrimage site of Bhadrik Ashrama and engaged himself there in trance to satisfy the Lord. So we might wonder, why did Krishna do this? Why did he ask Uddhava to stay behind? And why did he send him to this particular place, to Bhadrik Ashrama? Uddhava is not otherwise known to be particularly associated with that place. Uddhava developed a very strong attraction to Vrindavan, not to Bhadrik Ashrama. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has his commentary on this second verse. He explains to us. I won't read the Sanskrit, just the English. And I'll have to explain the English. It's commentary language, so it's a little concise, a little hard to follow, so I may have to explain some of it. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says about this second statement, Uddhava was ordered thus by the guru of all the inhabitants of the three worlds, because the verse says Triloka Guruna, the guru of the three lokas. Now that implies, Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, that Krishna is also, through the agency of Uddhava, the guru of his remaining devotees, namely the residents of Bhadrik Ashram. He's everybody's guru. And there's some devotees that he hasn't had much association with in those 125 years. He hasn't been able to give himself to his association to everybody. So there's some devotees who are still left, who haven't yet seen Krishna. Krishna never went there. The personality of Godhead, Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, had visited many places like Mithila on the earth, and other places on heaven, Vaikuntha, and the lower planets like Sutala Loka. He went to Mithila to meet Shutadev and Bahulashva, other devotees. He went to other places to defeat demons like Banasura. He went to Pragyotishpur, Gohati, to kill Banasura, not kill him, to defeat him. He went to the heavenly planets to get the Parijata tree. And he went down to Sutala Loka to bring back the sons of the Brahman. The son of his guru, he went to Sutala Loka to get the Brahman who came complaining that all his 10 sons had died at birth. He came complaining to Yudhishthir, "You're supposed to be Dharmaraj. Why are all of my sons dying? In your kingdom, nobody should die untimely." And Arjuna said, "I'll do it. I'll take care of this. If I cannot prevent your next son from dying, I'll kill myself," Arjuna promised. And the next son died anyway. And Arjuna was about to kill himself. Krishna said, "Wait a minute. Let's try to figure out what's going on here." And Krishna brought Arjuna to the other side, the end of the universe, to Mahakala Loka, beyond the Viraj River. And they met the expansion of Mahavishnu, Lord Mahakala, there, and brought back the sons of all ten sons of the Brahman. So Krishna had traveled all over the universe, various places, during his 125 years.
What about the sons of the demigods?
Sons of the demigods. Yeah. I don't know what that is. It's mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti. Anybody know? Sons of the demigods? Yeah. Devaki's six sons, who originally were the sons of Brahma, had taken birth as first as Kalanemi's sons, then Hiranyakashipu's sons. They were killed, and then they took birth as Devaki's sons. Okay, so those are the sons of the demigods, of Marichi and his brothers. Marichi and his brothers, the other sons. them, Marichi and his brothers, had taken birth as these children who had been killed because they had insulted, they had criticized their father, Brahma. Anyway, Krishna had gone all over the universe, all different planetary systems, all over the earth, many places. He had also perfected the lives of those who lived in all these places by their being able to see him, and by the philosophical instructions they received from his divine mouth. But Krishna had never gone to Bhadarik Ashram. And so in response to the eagerness of the sages who dwelled there, he sent Uddhava. It's too late now. Krishna's about to finish his pastimes. So as a last thought, he said, okay, I haven't gone to Bhadarik Ashram. Uddhava, you have to go there. Someone might comment, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, that during certain days of Brahma, Krishna himself goes to Bhadarik Ashram. So, at those times, Uddhava is not sent there. Some days of Brahma, Krishna himself does it. But this day of Brahma, the one we're living in, Krishna sent Uddhava. The word sandishta is there in the verse. It means sent. But it also means, sandesha means, sandesha is a sweet, but sandesha also means message. It's called a sandesha. Sandishta implies that Krishna gave him a message, not just sent him, but he gave him a message to take. This indicates that Krishna sent some message. In other words, Uddhava received the message, and Krishna told him, give this message to Narayan. The verse beginning, the verse previous to this, Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way, the first verse we read, was thus sent, Krishna sent that as part of his message. And Krishna is Shabda Yoni, it says in the second verse. That means Yoni is source, or the womb. Krishna is the origin of all sound. The source of all language, Krishna. The womb, the source of generation of language, especially including the original language of the Vedas. Shabda Brahma is the Vedas, the original sound. This, saying this, subtly implies that the personality of Godhead knows what even the Vedas don't know, because he's the origin of the Vedas. And then this is poetry. What's poetry? Poetry is just words. Is the Bhagavatam poetry or not? Definition of poetry that's given by the expert poets, like our Kavi Karnapur wrote his textbook on poetry, Alankar Kostuba, and he defines what makes, not just you write a verse, not just you have meter and rhyme, that doesn't make it poetry. Essence of poetry is called dwani. Dwani means echo. When when something you write expresses more than the words say, when there's an echo, an unspoken reverberation of an extra idea, that makes it poetry. That's a little hard to explain. Just like rasa. How do you describe rasa in words? The experience of emotional ecstasy, devotional ecstasy. You can't just say Mahabhava and scream at the top of your lungs, Mahabhava. Some preachers do that. You just say all the buzzwords, but you don't express the bhava, the rasa, just by saying it in words. That's the purpose of devotional poetry. A poet who is rasika, who knows those transcendental tastes, he can evoke, a reverberation in your heart. By reading his poetry, you'll feel the rasa if you're receptive to it. That's dwani. That's the power of poetry to awaken feelings in the heart that can't really just be said in words. Not the literal meaning. So the poetic meaning of words, that's the dwani, the reverberation. So in this is just Bhagavatam. This is not written by, it's written by Vyasadeva. He's supposed to be just a sage, not a poet. But Bhagavatam is very elevated poetry, very elegant poetry. It's especially some parts of it. This verse is being analyzed by Vishwanath Chakravarti in terms of poetic values, how there are different ideas being implied. This dhwani, this subtle implication. All that's being said here, literally, is that Krishna is the source of all the Vedas, and he's the guru of all the worlds. And Uddhava was instructed by him, sandishta. But just that word sandishta implies subtly that there was a message. Not just that he was sent there, go there and preach, but Krishna gave him a specific message to carry. We know that subtle implication from just the word sandishta. And then he says, the further implication, okay, when we say that Krishna is the source of all the Vedas, that subtly implies that he knows, Krishna knows things that are not known in the Vedas. Then Vishnu Chakravarti continues. Vishnu Chakravarti says, this echoes, now, yes.
In your description of this dhwani, is that the same when we say prema dhwani prayers? Is that the same?
Well, dhwani just means, no, that's, it means echo. It's just because when we say that prayer, it sounds like an echo, you know. Dhwani there just means reverberation in the literal sense. But in a technical sense, it means it awakens a thought in your heart, or a feeling in your heart that doesn't come just from the literal meaning of the words. You know, it's like a hidden or subtle meaning of the words. Okay. Right. Language can have different levels of meaning. If I say Ganga, that means the river that's across the street. You know, it's body of water. That's the literal meaning of the word. But suppose I say the village is on the Ganga. That can't be taken. That makes no sense literally. You know, you don't have villages floating on the river. But you do have villages located on the shore of the river. And we say villages on the Ganga. That's called metaphorical usage, figurative usage. Because I don't really mean literally on top of the water. I mean connected to the river indirectly. It's on the shore, which is next to the river. So that's figurative usage of the language. But then when I get an idea, when you mention the Ganga, the villages on the Ganga, oh, it must be very breezy and cool there. It must be a very sattvic place. That's the dhwani, the third meaning. First meaning is the literal meaning, body of water. Second meaning is figurative. You know, I can't mean literally a village floating on top of the river. I mean a village on the shore. Third meaning is when it evokes the image of, you know, of peacefulness, and you know, and auspiciousness. That's the dhwani. The very subtle, it's the third use of language, of words. So poetry, if you want to write poetry, you have to be able to use, to create dhwani. If there's no dhwani, it's not poetry. If there's no subtle awakening in the heart of some inspirational feelings. The word that's used is chamatkar. Amazement, astonishment. If something doesn't strike you as really astonishing, then it's not poetry. Poetry has to have some echo, some dhwani. But when you have double echo and triple echo, when one echo creates another one, and that one creates a third one, that's the best kind of poetry. It's called uttama kavya. You know, supermost poetry is when you have double or triple echoes. Echo that turns into another echo. So that's what we have here. I think we get four of them described by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Like the first echo is that Krishna, because he's the source of the Vedas, the womb of the Vedas, he knows things that the Vedas don't know. Second echo, echo is creating another echo, is that Vishnu Chakravarti says, this echoes itself in another subtle implication, that this special knowledge was deposited with Uddhava. Not only Krishna knows everything, but Uddhava is such an exceptional devotee that Krishna could give him this message that even the Vedas can't understand. That's the second echo, the double echo. This makes it first-class poetry. But then, Vishwanath Chakravarti goes on. Do you have the English of this? I don't think I gave you the commentary. You don't have it written down, right? Just the verses. You have the commentary? You have it, okay. Okay, excuse me, I'm changing a few of the words. You're probably wondering what I'm doing here. This echoes itself. Oh, okay. And there is an echo of this echo, third echo, that Nara and Narayan will receive the knowledge from the mouth of Uddhava. It's not said in so many words, but this is all subtle implication. Implication of an implication of an implication. This is, you know, poetry that's out of this world. This is the best kind of poetry. And then Vishnachakravarti says, and here is the letter that Krishna sent. So I don't know where he got it from. It's just Vishnachakravarti's own realization. He gives us the actual letter that Krishna sent to Narayan, that he gave to Uddhava to deliver. Do you have that there too?
Yes.
I'll read the first couple of sentences of the Sanskrit just to get into it. Swasti Sri Nara Narayanau Prati Vigyapanam Chedam. These Krishna's words. Sapada Shatavarsham Payantaiva Matvakata Prakasha Gata Lila Bhavet Tan Maryada Chasamprati Vridayati. And he goes on. I'll read the translation. Greetings to Sri Narayan, to whom this message is addressed. The pastime of showing myself publicly is supposed to last for a century and a quarter. The end of this period, that period, has now been reached. Therefore, I'm going to disappear at Dwarka, along with my entourage. After going to Dwarka and sending back to their respective abodes the demigods and other administrative devotees whom I previously made descend to the earth, in the part of me that was prayed for by Brahma, I will go to Vaikuntha. I know, in the beginning of the 10th canto, Brahma and the demigods go pray for Krishna to appear. That is actually Lord Narayan. He came to relieve the earth of its burden by killing all those demons. So that part of Krishna is going to go back to Vaikuntha, the part that was prayed for by Lord Brahma. Narayan will go back to Vaikuntha. And in another part, accompanied by Arjuna, I will come unseen to your residence. Because we read in various Puranas that Krishna and Arjuna are incarnations of Nara and Narayan. Krishna's Narayan from Bhadrika Ashram, and Arjuna is his twin brother, Nara Chaiva Narottamam. Of course, Jiva Goswami has to explain this to us. He does in the Krishna Sandarbha. Krishna is the original. Krishna and Arjuna are not just incarnations of Nara and Narayan. It's the other way around. Nara and Narayan are expansions of Krishna. But anyway, in the complicated way that Krishna, his partial expansions merge back into him when he appears, it can look like Krishna and Arjuna are incarnations of Nara and Narayan, and some sages describe it like that. We read in certain Puranas. So Krishna's telling Lord Nara and Narayan, in that form in which Arjuna and I expanded from you, we're coming back to Bhadrika Ashram, where we came from. Me and Arjuna. I and Arjuna. And then Krishna says, and for the benefit of you who are eager to see my complete original self, because Nara Narayan is not the complete original form of Godhead. So I know that you want to see me in my original form. So it's not just enough that I go back to Bhadrika Ashram in my Nara Narayan expansion. You want to see me in my original form. I'm sending this most dear of my personal associates, Uddhava, to whom I have granted the excellence of a bodily appearance just like mine. Indeed, and Krishna quotes himself, he's sending this verse as part of his message, Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he may remain in this world to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So there's a little glimpse why Krishna asked Uddhava to stay back, not to go back home to Godhead, back to Godhead, not yet. And why he sent him, of all places, to Bhadrika Ashram. Any questions or comments on that so far?
This part about Arjuna and Krishna, unmanifest, going together to merge into Nara Narayan.
Yes.
So, is that Nara Narayan become Krishna and Arjuna, or Krishna, they remain Mahanarayan. Krishna is the original. Which part of Krishna is it that actually merges into Narayan?
It's complicated. Narayan, not the Narayan vacate, but, you know, during the Krishna and Arjuna were present on this earth. Krishna was here for 125 years, Arjuna for about the same time. It's not that Narayan disappeared from Bhadarik Ashram for 125 years. They were still present, but their expansions as Arjuna and Krishna, as part of Arjuna, merged into the original Arjuna and Krishna. Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate, and Krishna's original abode is Goloka. There's a Dwarka and Goloka, so in the Dwarka of Goloka, Arjuna and Krishna are eternally associating.
Goloka
Dwarka. Okay, or Goloka Hastinapur, whatever you want, you know. There's also, you know, the Indraprastha and Hastinapur, the abode of the Pandavas is there in the spirit in Goloka also. Anyway, Krishna is there eternally with Arjuna in the spiritual world. So Narayan are just expansions of Krishna and Arjuna, not the other way around. The fact is that Krishna is the original, Arjuna's his eternal associate, and Narayan, the incarnations who appear, you know, on Mount Gandhamadana, you know, at Bhadarik Ashram, that's their abode, they're expansions only. They're not the original Godhead. But because of the complicated way in which the expansion appears out of the original, then merges back into the original, it can look like, and sometimes it's described by sages, that Narayan's incarnations are Krishna and Arjuna. It's said sometimes that Lord Narayan, you know, complaints came to him about these demons disturbing the world, and he got angry, pulled two hairs, he said, I'll protect you, pulled two hairs out of his head, one white and one black, threw them down. One entered the womb of, actually that was Krishna and Balaram. One entered the womb of Devaki, the other one of Rohini. And that's described in some Puranas as the origin of Krishna and Balaram, coming from Lord Narayan, Mahavishnu. But Jiva Goswami has to explain, of course Mahavishnu, according to our Siddhanta, is expansion of Krishna, not the other way around. And anyway, how is even Lord Mahavishnu going to have white hairs on his head? He's never an old man with white hair. Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never has white hair. Not in his original form. So that has to be understood in a different way. And Jiva Goswami explains. Yeah. The word Sitta, it says Sitta Krishna Kesha. Even the Bhagavatam uses that word. Sitta Krishna Kesha. Yeah. And it sounds like Krishna and Balaram are expansions of the hair of Lord Narayan. But the word Sitta, Jiva Goswami explains, also means nicely combed. Sitta means combed also. So he has Kesha, he has Krishna Kesha, he has black hair, which is always nicely dressed, also always nicely combed. Sitta Krishna Kesha. And there's various other, you know, long elaborate explanations Jiva Goswami gives to prove, of course, Krishna is the original. Yeah, he's not just an expansion of Narayan's two pieces of hair of Narayan. This is complicated. Anyway, we have Uddhava here. This is the end of the pastimes. We're starting from the end. Yes? Oh, this is the fourth chapter of the third canto. Verses 31 and 32. Fourth. Yes, please.
Here with Krishna is speaking about the parts of himself, one part that is...
Yeah. No, go ahead. I don't know if I can give a good answer, but go ahead.
One part that is the one is gonna leave, the one was prayed by Brahma.
He's going to go back to Vaikuntha.
He's going to leave to Vaikuntha.
Yes.
The other is the one who's going to join, that become Narayana Vignara with Arjuna.
Yes, and go back to Bhadrakashram.
The Krishna we're speaking here is Dwarkadish.
Yes, because Krishna just left. Krishna was living in Dwarka. He just walked out of Dwarka and went to Prabhas. He's sitting in Prabhas when he says this.
But
within him are all these other expansions. The Vaikuntha expansion is included with, is inside the body of Krishna, and so is the Naranarayan expansion. He's saying, I'm going to go back to Vaikuntha, and one part of me is going to go back to Vaikuntha. Another part of me is going to join you in Vadarakashram.
I was in my idea that this was the Dwarka, you know, Shyamasundara Krishna was speaking that way because the one from Dwarka is his expansion.
Yes.
In his other form.
But this is Krishna's Dwarka Lila. Yeah.
You came.
And Krishna doesn't. You know, when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, he leaves in his Vilas expansion. He leaves in his Mathura and Dwarka. Mathura and Dwarka, Krishna's in a different mood. Krishna in his original mood doesn't leave Vrindavan. But he remains there only in his invisible pastimes. The visible pastimes, he's appearing in his, he becomes Vasudeva. He becomes his own expansion. You want to see the complete Krishna, the original Krishna, you have to go to Vrindavan. And if you're not fortunate enough to be there during his visible pastimes, you're going to have to serve him in separation or hope, you know, maybe you'll get the eyes to see him, his invisible appearance. But Krishna, although in his original form, never steps a foot outside of Vrindavan. So this is Dwarka Krishna talking. Same person, but he's not showing him his whole personality. He's, you know, Krishna and Dwarka is the same person. We'll read later that he can't, he doesn't feel comfortable to pull out his flute and start playing it. You know, go out and tend the cows. He just feels embarrassed in the environment and surrounded by the Krishna and Dwarka to do that. So he's the same person, but again, he can't act the same. The mood's different.
Krishna,
yeah.
Krishna goes to ask him
for them. Yeah, they're not sad. They can't be happy. Krishna's there, same person, but it's a different place. But when he's in a different place, he can't be the same person. Okay. Yes. Well, it's something about him. You know, we're going to have to gradually piece together a picture of Uddhava as a person. Because what the Shastra can give us, even the Bhagavatam, is mostly a description of what he said and what he did, what was said to him, what was said about him. To actually get a glimpse of his inner personality, that's going to be difficult. We can see a few things. I mean, he must be a very exceptional devotee to get this kind of trust from Krishna. Krishna didn't entrust such a message with anybody else. This is not the first time Krishna gave an important message to Uddhava. And you know, the very important incident of Uddhava being dispatched to Vrindavan with the message to the Vrijvasis and especially the gopis. So we'll have to trace out who Uddhava must be, what kind of person he must be to get to have that confidence of Krishna, that Krishna would entrust him with these messages. We'll gradually try to piece it together. This is just like a glimpse. But at least from this we can see that this is a very trusted devotee. There are different kinds of messengers. We read about this in that same book, Alankar Kostava. Rupa Goswami discusses also about different kinds of dutis, male and female messengers, in the Nectar of Devotion. Bhakti Samhita Sindhu. The lowest class, there are three classes of messengers. The inferior messenger is just someone who can carry a message, won't, you know, lose it. You know, and you can't trust him to put it in his own words. You can't trust him, you know, just tell him, you know, you explain it your own. You have to give it to him written down, or he has to memorize the words and just repeat them. Whereas a more qualified messenger can explain it in his own words, can deal with the immediate situation. You can see the reaction and deal with the devotees who are receiving the message. And he can improvise. He can, you know, have the insight, the intelligence to deal with the immediate situation, you know, to deal on the ground with the... But that requires most perfect, most qualified messenger. So that's Uddhava. You know, Uddhava is able to go and deal with the Brijvasis, deal with the gopis, and know how to treat them and how to learn from them properly. And we'll be looking at that. There are two long chapters in the 10th canto, chapters 46 and 47. Uddhava goes to Vrindavan. We'll be studying those. Okay. We're supposed to go until 1 o'clock. So I like to read this. Unfortunately, I could not hand out this material, the passages we're going to read from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is an unpublished manuscript of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and we can't let it out in printed form yet. So I'll have to read it to you. Now we're going to jump ahead to the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Uddhava is prominent in both halves, both parts of the book. Brihad Bhagavatamrita was written by Srila Sanatana Goswami to explain the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's not a commentary on the Bhagavatam. We have commentaries by Sanatana Goswami. He wrote a commentary on the 10th canto. We have Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas explaining the Bhagavatam. But Sanatana Goswami tries something else in this Brihad Bhagavatamrita to explain the essence of the Bhagavatam without making it a dry textbook. It's in story form. And there are two different stories in the two halves of the book that don't seem to have anything to do with anything that's described in the Bhagavatam. There's a story about Narada Muni, first half, wanting to find who is the best devotee of Krishna, who has the most of Krishna's mercy. And he ends up traveling all over the material universe to find who is Krishna's greatest devotee. That's the whole first half, seven chapters of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You may have read some translations. The second half is the story of Gopukumara, a young boy from Govardhan, uneducated. But he gets the mercy of a Vaishnav who appears from nowhere, gives him a Gopal mantra to chant. On the strength of that mantra, he's able to fulfill all his desires. And he ends up also, like Narada, traveling all over the material world and going beyond into the spiritual world. And he's looking for that Gopal who he's been worshipping. He doesn't know where to find him. He has no idea. He doesn't even know who Lord Brahma is. He doesn't know anything about the way the universe is set up. He doesn't know anything about spiritual life. He hasn't been taught anything. But somehow he's got this urge in his heart to find the Lord who he's worshipping. And he goes all the way to Vaikuntha. He meets Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. Lord Narayan invites him to stay there as his friend and associate. But Gopakumar, he's a Brijbasi, cowherd boy. Even when he went to Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha Vasi, he said, "Why don't you change your dress? You can dress like it. We'll give you forearms and you can have a Vaikuntha body." And he didn't want it. He wanted to remain as a cowherd boy, Gopakumar. And he didn't really fit in Vaikuntha. Even when he first met Narayan, he recognized that this is my Gopal. So he tried to embrace Lord Narayan. And all the Vaikuntha Vasis surrounding were very nervous. You know, who is this guy? Yeah, treating our Lord so familiarly, and they tried to preach to him, you know, when you come in front of Lord Narayan, you got to stand properly, offer prayers, don't shuffle around, and don't you know, be too intimate. And, you know, he tried to conform, but it was hard for him. And actually, Lord Narayan, in order to make Gopakumar feel good, he had invited him every day to come and play his flute. Gopakumar also played the flute. So he would play flute for Narayan, entertain him. But still he was feeling out of place. but he wasn't really where he was supposed to be. So Narada Muni appeared to him in Vaikuntha and kindly gave him some instructions that there is a better place. We can't really talk about it here. You know, he took him in a corner and said, I can't talk about this in front of everybody here in Vaikuntha, but there is a better place. And Narada Muni instructed Gopakumara about the glories of Goloka, that there's some place, you know, even greater than this Vaikuntha, where devotees can have a very intimate, loving reciprocation with the Lord, Lord Gopal. So Narada Muni gave Gopakumara the instructions on which he was able to go to Goloka. He first went to Dwarka. Goloka has its three parts, Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And so Gopakumara came to Dwarka in the spiritual world and met Krishna in his Dwarka form. And he met Narada Muni again. And Krishna greeted him and said, you can stay with Uddhava. We'll put you up in Uddhava's house. And Uddhava will take care of you. Uddhava and Narada, two of them, they'll be your preceptors. So our Gopakumara learned about life in Goloka, first of all, from Narada and Uddhava. And so this is the passage I'm going to read. Gopakumara's guest in Uddhava's house, and Narada is also there. And they're trying to explain to him, he's in Dwarka now, but they're trying to explain to him about Vrindavan, that even better place. Because that's where Gopakumara, he'll only be satisfied ultimately when he gets to see Krishna in Vrindavan. So,
We don't have the text either.
No? I'm sorry. Nothing. Nah. The first volume will be available in a few weeks. It's coming from the printer. Second volume, you have to wait about a year. And I'm reading from the second volume, chapter 5. So Narada and Uddhava are talking to Gopakumara. I'm going to read the Sanskrit verses also, about 20 verses here, if we have enough time. Shri Gopakumara uvacha maya sapada graham esha natva sadainyam ukto bhagavam stvameva janasi tatsarvam itidam aha smitva nirikshyananam uravasya. Shri Gopakumara said, taking hold of Narada's feet, I bowed down and humbly told him, my lord, you know everything about this. They're starting to talk about the glories of Vrindavan. So Gopakumara is telling Narada, you can explain, you know all about Krishna's intimate glories, you can tell me. Then Narada smiled and spoke, looking at Uddhava's face. Now here's the commentary. This is the commentary of Sanatana Goswami, the author of this text. He wrote his own commentary, and I paraphrased it. So the commentary, Gopakumara is extremely grateful that Narada understands completely the cause and extent of his mind's discontent. Honestly recognizing his inferior dependent position, Narada's, recognizing his own inferior position, he bowed down. No, I'm sorry. Gopakumara is recognizing his inferior position. He's bowing down and touched Narada's feet. Narada was happy to see this because it meant that Gopakumara was approaching perfection. Narada smiled at Gopakumara's eagerness to receive the most confidential truth, and Narada turned to Uddhava, who would properly reveal it. Sri Narada Uvacha, Uddhavayam aho gopa putro govardhanodbhavaha madvisham twadvishanam cha mrigyan vastu nudurlabham itastato brahman vyagra kadachit apikutrachit nati kramati chittantar lagnam tam shokam artidam. Sri Narada said, just see Uddhava, this son of a cowherd born at Govardhan, is seeking something unachievable by people like you and me. Greatly agitated, he wanders here and there, never transcending anywhere the painful distress that is fixed in his heart. This is Narada talking to Uddhava about Gopal Kumar. Commentary. This son of a cowherd has wandered, his heart full of indescribable pain, all over the material and spiritual worlds. And now he has taken shelter in Uddhava's house. This seeker has not been able to find peace because his desired goal is beyond the capacity of even great Vaishnavas like Narada and Uddhava. Why Gopal Kumar has such an unlikely ambition, Narada explains with the phrase Govardhan Odababaha, born at Govardhan. Little explanation, Narada and Uddhava, they're basically devotees. Narada is a devotee basically of Lord Narayan. He came to Vrindavan to take Krishna out of Vrindavan. He told Kamsa, you want to kill Krishna and Balaram, you better take the opportunity to get him here to Mathura. You're not going to be able to kill them as long as they stay in Vrindavan. So it was on Narada's instigation that Kamsa sent Utkura to take Krishna away. Narada wants to see Krishna leave Vrindavan and go to Mathura, because he's a Vaikuntha devotee. He wants to see Krishna in his Vaikuntha aspect. Uddhava also is an eternal associate of Krishna in Dwarka. He went to Vrindavan. He has a special relationship with the devotees, but he's basically a Dwarka devotee. So both of them are thinking, Narada and Uddhava, that they're of their own disqualification to live in Vrindavan. But this Gopal Kumar is something special. He's on his way to eternal residence in Vrindavan. So we're learning something about Uddhava's personality. He's not a Vrijbasi, but his special position is someone who fully appreciates the mood of Vrijbasi. This is something very special. Servant of the servant of the servant. Uddhava is special. He's in Sakya Rasa, but he has a very strong appreciation for the mood of the gopis. Yeah, he's a worshipper of the dust of the lotus feet of the gopis. Uddhava, very unique person in Sakya Rasa, not in ordinary Sakya Rasa at all. Okay. Let me continue this. Tarenam bata tatratya lokanugraha kataraha bhavanapi naparshvastam patibodayate kshanam. Indeed, Uddhava, you are always anxious for the mercy of that place's resident, that place over there, Vrindavan. Why not then spend a moment to enlighten this person, Gopal Kumar, who is present right beside you? So Narada is telling Uddhava, you're the best person to tell about the glories of Vrindavan. Narada continues, talking to Uddhava. Padam durataram tadvai tatsukanubhavas tata tatsadhanam api pratyam asmakam api durgatam. That abode, as well as the happiness relished there, is inaccessible to us. And even the means to achieve that abode is so rarely obtained that we can only pray for it. Then Uddhava speaks. Shrimad Uddhava uvacha rajabhumav ayam jatas tasyam gopatvam acharat gopal Opasananishto Vishishto Sman Mahojas Mahashayam. Sriman Uddhava said, this person, Gopal Kumar, was born in Vrajabhumi. And he, there, he was engaged as a cowherd, firmly established in the worship of Lord Gopal. He is surely a much greater soul than us. Okay, now notice, let's try to understand Narada's, Uddhava's mood here. The commentary says, Narada just told Uddhava that Sri Goloka is hardly approachable by persons like you and me, Narada and Uddhava. This statement was a little disturbing to Uddhava. Why? Because it's insulting? You know, what do you mean I'm not qualified to enter Brahman? No, it was disturbing to him because it sounded to him like he was being described in a better light than everyone else in Vaikuntha. Now, what disturbed him is to be glorified as better than anybody else. This is not what we're used to in the material world. Everybody wants to be praised as the best. Vaikuntha mood, even just Vaikuntha, what to speak of Goloka, is that you cannot tolerate being told that you're better than anybody else. Still, he wanted to please Narada by enlightening Gopakumar as Narada had requested. He first gave his opinion that Gopakumar, not himself or even Narada, was the most spiritually advanced person present. After all, Gopakumar was a native of Govardhan, a lifelong tender of the Dham's cows, and a worshipper of Sri Madan Gopal and his 10-syllable mantra. Moreover, wherever Gopakumar went, he was dissatisfied because he could not find his worshipable Lord. This is Uddhava's qualification, is that he doesn't think himself anything special, and that he worships those who actually have the privilege to live in Vrindavan. Okay, so the Narada reacts. Sotsaham ahatam harshat tat chutvad slishya naradaha yatayam labate bishtam topa disha satvaram. Narada was delighted to hear this. He embraced Uddhava and enthusiastically told him, please, quickly instruct him so that he may fulfill his desires. So Narada is begging him, please tell him what he needs to hear. Abravid Uddhavo jatya kshatriyo ham mahamune upadesha pradane tan nadikari twayistite. Uddhava replied, O great sage, being a kshatriya by birth, I am not qualified to instruct him in your presence. The first thing Uddhava says is that I'm only a kshatriya, you're a great Brahmin sage, demigod, sage of the demigods. So, you know, you're asking me to talk? Commentary, Uddhava considers himself second class by birth and character. Nevertheless, he might be reminded that kshatriyas are also allowed to teach. According to the Dharma Shastras, kshatriyas may engage in the same activities prescribed for Brahmins, except for receiving charity. They can't take charity, but they can teach. Krishna explained this to Uddhava. Uddhava should know this, because Krishna explained it to him in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 7.11.14. Vipras yadyanadini shad anyas apati graha. For a Brahmin, there are 6 occupational duties. A kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other 5 duties. This is Krishna talking to Uddhava. He's heard it before. Without denying this authoritative statement, Uddhava nonetheless thinks it improper for him to speak on this topic in the presence of Narada, the Adi Guru of the process of devotional service. Any questions or comments? Yeah. It's degrading for Kshatriya. Kshatriya
has to win by force or taxes. They have a right to take taxes, or else they have to win it by valor. I'm sorry.
That was a statement of doom.
I'm not going to ask. Yeah, except we can't win. Also, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Narada Muni is going around the universe, he meets Asur's Pallad telling him about his grandson Bali, that Krishna insulted Bali in the form of Vamanadeva. Bali is a great Kshatriya. And Indra. Krishna cheated Bali Maharaj in order to get back into his kingdom. Bali conquered fair and square. He conquered the kingdom of heaven. But Mother Aditi prayed for the Lord to appear and take back Indra's kingdom for him. But instead of Vamanadeva, instead of fighting for it, and in an honorable way, fighting together with Indra to defeat the demons, he cheated Bali. Played a trick to get the kingdom back. Very degrading, very insulting for Indra. That Vishnu, instead of in an honorable way fighting for it, just had to play some trick to get back the kingdom. So that kind of thing, especially asking for charity, especially cheating and deceiving in order to get something, very dishonorable for Brahman, for a Kshatriya. Okay, so I'll finish this up with a few more verses. Narado Nitaram Uchayar Vihasyavadad Udavam Navaikunte Pyapetasmin Kshatriyatva Matistava. Narada laughed very loudly and said to Uddhava, "Even here in Vaikuntha, you cannot stop thinking of yourself as a Kshatriya." Uddhava sasmitam praha kim bruyam sanamadvisham apeteti kilasmakam tabor apayatina. Smiling, Uddhava said, "What can I say? How can someone like me reject his role as a Kshatriya when even our Lord has not rejected his?" Krishna is acting like a Kshatriya. Yata tatva tatra trapi sadharma paripalanam garhastyadi jaya jyeshya vipra samadhanadikam. The Lord, Krishna, maintains the religious principles of civilized persons here in Vaikuntha, just as he does on the earth. He behaves like a proper grihastha, conquers his enemies, shows respect to elders and Brahmins, and so forth. Taduktya narado harsha bara kranta mana hasan utplut otplutya chakrosham idamaha suvismitam. These words filled Narada's mind with pleasure, and he laughed, jumped up and down, and shouted in joy. Expressing his surprise, he spoke as follows. Okay, I'll skip the Sanskrit in the next few verses. Sri Narada said, "Ah, just see the amazing charm and glory of the personality of Godhead's pastimes. And see how seriously committed his devotees are to serving him, and him alone in those pastimes. Oh, how very curious it is that this Lord plays in the topmost abode above Vaikuntha in the same way as he does in the world of mortals, just to satisfy his dear devotees. Even experienced devotees like myself are bewildered to see such pastimes, which make us wonder whether we are in the Dwarka of Vrindavan or the Dwarka of the material world. It is quite fitting. The devotees like you are only interested in pure, loving, devotional service to the Lord's lotus feet." He's talking to Uddhava. "Such prema bhaktas, such prema bhakti for the Lord, who is very affectionate to his devotees, fulfills all the devotees' ambitions, and is alone their final goal.
Now he's glorifying Uddhava now, he's taking the opportunity.
You are not particularly interested in the activities of the Lord that suit his residence in Vaikuntha, or those suitable for his sojourn in the material world, or those activities that suit his expansions of opulent power. You are not even interested in his universal friendship toward everyone. You are always, talking to Uddhava, you are always in the mood of utter humility, which is most favorable for nourishing, pure, loving devotion. And the Lord enjoys pastimes as if absorbed in worldly sense gratification, which is enough to evoke his devotees' pure love for him. Who can describe the greatness of the mature perfection of pure love of God, which makes the Supreme Lord act as if an ordinary good friend? Ah, let me praise Krishna's mood as an ordinary friend, which eclipses the respect and reverence of his devotees, and thus expands their pure love for him. So I have a question based on what I just read. In these few verses that mentioned the one most important qualification to get entrance into Vrindavan, to Vrajadham. Can you catch which one it is? Pure love is pure love in Vaikuntha. What's special? What's a special qualification you have to have?
Humility.
Yes. Utter humility. Dainyam. This is Narada Muni later explains to Gopal Kumar. This is what you need to get into. You're already in Dwarka. You want to go to Vrindavan? What you need is dainyam. Utter humility. Uddhava. Uddhava's got that utter humility. Now, if it was just for that, he could be allowed to be an eternal resident in Vrindavan. But he's got special responsibilities as Krishna's associate in Dwarka. He can't leave Dwarka because he's just like Hanuman, can't leave the service of Lord Ramachandra. Even after he hears the glories of Goloka, he can't leave Ayodhya because he's attached to Lord Ramachandra. Similarly, Uddhava is attached to Krishna in Dwarka. He's part of one of the main characters there. But as far as the qualification, he's got the qualification to enter Vrindavan. He's got the humility. We can pretty much stop there for today. Are there any discussion, any questions? Yes. Contradictory. So there's one disqualification that is attached to Krishna in Dwarka. Yeah, and Krishna won't let him go. What can you do? Yeah, our business is to satisfy Krishna. Yeah, we don't want immature devotees want to go to Radhakund for sense gratification. Now they think that that's where they'll get the most nectar. But the pursuit of pure devotional service is not supposed to be the pursuit of selfish gratification. To give Krishna what he wants. If Krishna wants you to serve him in Vaikuntha, okay, I'll do it. So Uddhava is eternally serving Krishna in Dwarka. That's what Krishna wants of him. At the same time, he's constantly meditating on the better service that the gopis do. That's the mystery of a person like Uddhava. He does what Krishna wants. Yeah. That's the first thing. His first business is to satisfy Krishna. We'll get to that. He's living. Yes, he's living. He's got his place in Vrindavan. We'll get to that by the end of the 10 days. I can tell you right now, but it keeps something. Keeps something a little bit of a surprise. You might know already. Yes. Yes. Again, the Vaikuntha devotees, like Uddhava and Narada especially, they're perfect examples of devotees who are associates of Krishna outside of Vrindavan. They have their eternal place. Narada is especially a Vaikuntha devotee. He comes to Vrindavan sometimes, but usually just to make trouble. But he's constantly glorifying Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan, his pastimes with Radharani, his pastimes with his other intimate devotees. And in general, the devotees in Vaikuntha, they're not completely ignorant that Krishna has his more intimate pastimes. So you can be living in Vaikuntha and be be thinking about, revering the devotion of the devotees in Vrindavan, but you're not privileged to live in those pastimes. One thing to appreciate is another thing to join. We have like the Shriva, I'm sorry, oh boy, let me just make a comment. Like in the other Sampradayas, the Shri Sampradaya, it's not like they're completely ignorant of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. You can read the devotional poetry of the Alwars, the early saints of that Sampradaya before Ramanujacharya. They write about the gopis and, you know, they write poetry in the mood of the gopis. But the same poet, on one page, will be singing a song in the mood of a gopi. The next page is in the mood of one of Hanuman's associates. Yeah, complete shift. It's like they don't recognize fixed rasas in the Sri Sampradaya. They think that it's, you know, if you're liberated, you should be free. You should be free to be whatever rasa you want from one minute to the next. And to be assigned only one rasa is a limitation. That's their idea.
We don't agree. Well, our idea is that you have one sort of one eternal lesson. But the point is that they do have they're Vaikuntha devotees, but they have great appreciation of Vrindavan, you know, Vraja Bhakti. And they glorify it, they sing about it, they think about it, but they can't join it. Okay, so Narada and Uddhava are like the best examples of that class of devotee. Not really a Vraja a Vrindavan devotee, but they're constantly meditating on devotion of those who are eternal associates of Krishna and Vrindavan. We'll start over here and move around. Thank you. Yes, it's kind of hard here. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it means like not thinking yourself important. You know, the only worth of my existence is to give Krishna pleasure. I don't deserve anything for myself. That's out of humility. That's the mood of the Vrindavan devotees. They live only for Krishna. They don't have their own agenda. Whatever they'll say, they'll do anything to satisfy Krishna. They'll go to hell, they'll do anything for them. Eternal associate.
I kind of looked at it is Lord Krishna and Lord Uddhava and Uddhava appearing at the same time. And there is Uddhava appearing much later than
Krishna. I think Uddhava is a little younger than Krishna. They don't meet up. They meet one another in Mathura. You know, when Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan, he sent him from Mathura, not from Dwarka. When he sent, you know, with the message to the Vrajavasis, they were living in Mathura at that time. When Krishna visited Kubja, Uddhava came with him in Balaram. So Uddhava was with Krishna in Mathura first. But they didn't meet. Just like Arjuna didn't meet Krishna until Krishna was in Dwarka. So Uddhava didn't meet Krishna until Krishna moved to Mathura. That's not clear. Uddhava is said to be the son of Upagava and the disciple of Brihaspati. So apparently he was living on the heavenly planets and then came down or something. Somehow he was studied under Brihaspati. Brihaspati is living on the heavenly planets. And the identity of his father is a little uncertain, who this Upagava is, where he was living. It's said that he was born in Madhya Pradesh. in not Madhya Pradesh, this modern state, but in the middle part of India. And Brahmins in the middle part of India normally have fair skin. They're not very dark complexions. The peculiar thing is that Uddhava, by becoming Krishna's intimate friend, changed color. He became the same color as Krishna. Yeah. So in connection with that, it's mentioned that he was born in the central part of India. But somehow he became Brihaspati's disciple, studied with Brihaspati. That history is not given. There's some conjecture or a statement somewhere that actually Upagava is one of Vasudeva's brothers, Devabhaga, one of Vasudeva's six brothers. But that's not confirmed in other sources. Said to be a cousin, but that just may mean because of the age. You know, like in a village, anybody who's a certain age, you call him uncle, even though he's not really your uncle. This is a village relationship. But there's some opinion that actually he actually is a cousin, younger cousin. Okay, anything else? Yeah. Yes. About? Yeah. Navadvipa is not different than Vrindavan. Navadvipa is, you know, it's like a different side of, but it's esoteric. It's revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, you won't find any mention of it in most of the Vedic literature. It's a secret. Yes. Well, those concluding pastimes occur 5,000 years later. Those concluding pastimes occur during the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later. It's a later time. Well, we shouldn't be too concerned about this. You know, that we don't have to be too upset that, you know, where's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Where's Navadvipa in the Bhagavatam? It's not there. You know, so we're missing something. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that a devotee can get the same benefit meditating on Krishna's Leela or Lord Gauranga's Leela. They're non-different. So even though there's no explicit mention of Navadvipa, it's non-different. Even though the Bhagavatam mentions Lord Chaitanya only very, you know, obliquely, a few verses that could be interpreted, that we interpret as describing Lord Chaitanya, two verses out of the whole Bhagavatam that mention him. There's mention, a lot of mention of the Yuga Dharma of Nam Sankirtan in the Bhagavatam. But as far as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his abode, they're hardly mentioned in the Bhagavatam. But it doesn't really matter if you can meditate on Krishna's Leela and on the Leela of the different avatars of Krishna. Half of the Bhagavatam is not about Krishna Leela, it's about other avatars and devotees of Krishna. But it's all connected with Krishna. Whether you can focus your mind on Krishna Leela or Chaitanya Leela, it's both the same anyway. One or the other, you don't have to worry about getting the right mix. You can, you know, if it happens to be your proclivity or it just happens to be your fate to be absorbed in one or the other, you're getting the benefit of both. If you approach Krishna, you know, Krishna Bhakti in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you don't have to think separately about Lord Chaitanya's Leela. They're non-different than Krishna's Leela. I'm sorry, because I'm living in Rajadham, and we're not so surrounded by the presence of Lord Chaitanya there, obviously, it's here. Well, I think that happens in the spiritual world. That's outside the scope of material time. I would leave Dham as just like Vrindavan. Dham is not only eternal in the spiritual world, but Vraja Dham on the earth is eternal. As long as there's a material world to be manifest in, it will be manifest. If the whole material world is destroyed, okay, then it just merges back into the Goloka. But that Vajradhama is always there. It's always located, you know, 140 kilometers south of Delhi. It's always there. Same thing with Navadvipa. It didn't get created at some point in time. It's co-eternal with the whole universe. It existed before the universe. So the question of when Radharani created, that's outside the scope of material time. It's eternal. There's only one virtue. It may manifest in each universe. Yeah, like reflected, like a mood, you know, the same mood is reflected in different parts of water. Because the original is in the spiritual world. The replica in the material world is non-different, but it's not that there's a separate replica in each universe. They have to be considered all non-different. We say replica, but it's really non-different. You know.
Vrajas in other universes are also non-different?
Yeah, they would be the same. It's the same Vraja, just manifest in different places. It's like you have a television program, you know. You may be watching the television program in Madras or in Bombay, but it's the same television program.
So what about Govardhan? There's also a Govardhan in other universes?
If the universe is qualified to have Vrajadhan, then it has Govardhan too. Maybe some universe is so unfortunate that the Vrajadhan doesn't manifest itself at all, but if it does, then it includes everything. Just like, you know, in Navadvipdham here, all the different aspects of Vrajadhan are here. You can discover them, you can find them. Govardhan is here too. Certainly can be in a different universe also. Okay. 105, we've got to stop. We'll have to continue tomorrow. I thank you all, glory to Srila Prabhupada.